The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the last few weeks, I've been talking about concentration practice. And, sometimes from time to time doing these Dharma talks, I'll get some questions from people in the internet world. They'll send a message through Audio Dharma. And the question came up about something I referred to in the first week when I talked about concentration, the connection between concentration and insight. And this person expressed an interest in hearing more about that. And I had been thinking about doing that. And so that's what I'm going to talk about tonight, how concentration and insight work together. After all, the name on this building is Insight Meditation Center. So, we don't talk about insight very much. So I thought I'd talk about that a little bit this evening and how concentration fits into this picture. So to begin this, I'd like to explore kind of the terrain of concentration. I've been talking about concentration for the last couple of weeks in the way that we mostly think about concentration, which is as a focused attention on some particular experience. And I've been talking about it with respect to paying attention to the breathing. So staying with the breathing, just attending to the experience of breathing. This begins to settle the mind down. And this is typically the way we think about concentration practice. When we think about the term concentration, we generally think of kind of an exclusive, focused attention. And this is one way to cultivate concentration. We pick one thing, we stay with it. Anytime we're not on that thing, we just come back. It's a very simple kind of two-part recognition. Breath, not breath. Breath, not breath. Not breath, come back to breath. So it's really simple. And it's a very easy way to begin to settle the mind down. This kind of just coming back to the breath. And through this kind of a practice, the mind becomes quite, or can become quite still, quite settled down, and it feels good. I mean, the mind can become quite happy. When the mind gets really settled, it feels really good. Very delightful bodily feelings can come through experience. So it can be quite a pleasant experience. So that's kind of what we normally think of as concentration, just that one pointed attention on one particular thing. There's another kind of concentration, another way that concentration develops in meditation practice that's with respect to understanding how insight fits into the picture. It's important to understand this other kind of concentration as well. And this is a kind of concentration that we could call it moment-to-moment concentration, where the instead of the attention settling on one experience and becoming still and stable on that one experience, instead it's more that the attention becomes still, but it's able to stay connected to a changing flow of experience. So we might have a sense of just sitting in a space where there's a continual stream of a kind of like a river of experience. Sounds and body sensations and thoughts and another body sensation and another sound, and then a mood or an emotion comes up. There's just kind of this flow of changing experience. Now the concentration that can come from that kind of connection with experience, it's not that we're just kind of present for a bunch of stuff. It means that the mind is settled and stable with changing experience. The mind is not following out after these sounds and body sensations. You know, often we see, as we're trying to pay attention to the breathing, you know, the mind will go off, we'll be sitting there paying attention to the breathing, and then the sound of a motorcycle goes by. And we hear the motorcycle, but immediately we start thinking about the motorcycle. You know, what kind of motorcycle was that? Why don't they, you know, post a sign, go slow outside of IMC so the motorcycles aren't so loud? So we start thinking about it. That's losing the mindfulness. So the concentration that develops on changing experience is a kind of concentration that can stay present for all kinds of experience without following out after it with thought. So it's a kind of a stability of the mind here. The mind is stable and present without going out, reacting to things and thinking about things. It's an open, non-judgmental stability of mind, non-reactive, awareness of what's happening while it's happening on a variety of experience. So this kind of concentration, it can be in some ways a little more difficult to develop, to start from that place. Because it's so easy when something comes into experience, a new sound or a new body sensation, to start thinking about it. We so easily get, we follow the thread of our experience and start thinking about it. That's our habit. That's the way we've lived our lives. So it's kind of harder to learn how to settle the mind down. Often it's harder to learn how to settle the mind down in that open awareness. So in order to learn how to stay present in that kind of a space where we're just taking in kind of the flow of experience, we need to have a really clear understanding about what awareness actually is, what it means to be present. What does it mean to not be following off into after things in thought? So it's really easy to kind of delude ourselves into thinking, oh yes, I'm just sitting in the flow of a stream of awareness, but we're really just kind of drifting off and thinking about things. So in both cases, in both kinds of concentration, the one-pointed concentration where we're really focused on one particular thing, and in this kind of concentration that comes where the mind's able to be stable and not wandering around, but taking in a flow of experience. In both cases, the thing that makes the concentration happen is the mindfulness being continuous. The mindfulness is happening moment after moment after moment after moment after moment. In the concentration where we're focusing on one thing, it's a little bit easier to recognize that whether that mindfulness is present moment after moment, because there's just two things we're paying attention to, breath, not breath, not breath, breath, not breath. So we can kind of begin to see, okay, is the awareness steady with the breath? And we begin to learn, what does it feel like for the awareness to be steady with the breath? And it's pretty easy to recognize when it moves off to not breath. With the open awareness, we call this an open awareness, sometimes it's called a choiceless awareness, where we're not particularly directing the attention to pay attention to anything in particular. It's more like just settling back and saying, okay, life, what does it feel like to be living you right now? Again, the awareness is steady, the mindfulness is steady moment after moment. It's just picking up on different things moment after moment. One moment it may be a breath, the next moment it may be a sound, the next moment it may be a body sensation, the next moment it may be an emotion. But just the awareness is just meeting moment after moment after moment after moment. It's that stability of the mindfulness, moment after moment, that creates the concentration in both cases. And both kinds of concentration do, they feel different. You know, the one-pointed concentration tends to feel really still. It moves into a place where the mind and the thing that we're paying attention to, they kind of unify, and things get really quiet. And it can even get to the place where it feels like, you know, nothing else is happening but the breath. You know, everything else kind of just really recedes into the distance. And so there's just this experience. And so the mind gets really quiet. Things tend to get really quiet with concentration, with that kind of one-pointed concentration. With this moment-to-moment concentration, the mind gets still and non-reactive, and yet it may feel like there's a whole, like, volcano of things happening. Like, just like this stream of ever-changing experience is happening. So it doesn't necessarily feel like the experience is quiet or still, but the mind feels still, and the mind feels non-reactive, the mind feels balanced. So there's a different quality to these two kinds of concentration. They can feel a little bit different, but the basic balance of mind is present. And the hindrances, I talked about the hindrances last week, these qualities of mind that kind of get in the way of concentration, sense desire, ill will, sleepiness, restlessness, and doubt. In both kinds of concentration, those states fall away. So you experience the kind of what is sometimes called the bliss of seclusion. You know, you're not attacked by these hindrances in both of these states of concentration. And so from that standpoint, both of these states of concentration feel pretty good. But they do have this different quality, where the one-pointed concentration has more of a stillness to it than the open awareness type of concentration. So that's just kind of the description of two different kinds of concentration. And almost all of the techniques of meditation fall somewhere in a range, either on one side or the other or in between. There's a vast terrain of practices that sometimes they blend these two types of concentration. Sometimes there's focused on one or the other. So, for example, I mean, I'll just give you three examples here, one on each side and one kind of in the middle. A concentration practice where we are, you know, settling at the nostrils and just attending to this very small area, trying to let go of anything, not that, coming back to that over and over and over again. That's the kind of concentration of focused attention. And then there's a practice on the other side that I learned with my teacher in Burma, Saira Utejaniya. And he gives almost no instructions. I mean, he basically says, notice awareness, notice that you're aware and what you're aware of. That's his instruction. No particular directing of the attention, nothing, no tools or techniques. It's just like, notice what you're aware of. That's it. And it's like, it's all over the place, what the mind is aware of. So that's on the other side. And then there's a kind of practice that we generally teach here, which is it comes from the Burmese tradition, from the Sayadaw, Mahasi Sayadaw lineage, where we start by putting our attention on the breathing, settling the mind down with the breathing, but we actually pay attention to how the breathing changes. So this I think requires a little bit of distinction between the concentration practice at the nostrils that I was talking about a minute ago. You know, when we put our attention just at the nostrils and just focus on the breath in that way, what tends to happen is that the breath becomes an object that gets really stable. We're more attending to kind of the rhythm or the flow or the stream than we are the detail of the breath. And so what happens, what tends to happen in that case is that actually, eventually, that experience of breathing becomes a mental idea of the breathing. And so that mental idea becomes really, really still. So that the one-pointed concentration, the one-pointed focus, starts with the sensations but turns into a concept. And then it's the concept of breathing that gets really, really stable. Concepts in the mind can get really stable if you're focused on them. Experience in the present moment does not get stable when you pay attention to it. Experience in the present moment changes as you pay attention to it. And so this is a kind of a distinction in terms of these two practices. So in the focused practice of trying to get really still in the mind, you're not really tuning to change. You're just kind of tuning to a kind of a quality of the breath. And it becomes very, the mind turns that into a concept. So in the practice that we normally teach here, we teach paying attention to the sensations of the breathing. And this is a kind of a hybrid, in a way, between these two poles of practice. Because we're using the breath as a way to settle the mind down, so that we're not just allowing the mind to pay attention to whatever is happening. We're settling the mind with the breathing, but we're paying attention to how the sensations of the breathing change. And this noticing change is the key point where concentration and insight begin to join. And so that I want to kind of make sure that distinction is clear. So with this hybrid practice, we pay attention to the breath, we notice the breath. How does it change from the beginning to the middle of the end of the in-breath? How do we know that the out-breath begins? How does it change from beginning to middle to end of the out-breath? So we're paying attention to the actual details of the experience in the present moment. And the instructions are, with the kind of practice that we do here too, if you notice something pulls your attention away from the breath, like the sound of a motorcycle, we don't necessarily try to hold to the breath. If that sound of the motorcycle is very compelling, if it pulls you, there's no need to try to struggle to stay with the breath. We notice the attention has been drawn to that experience of the motorcycle. We pay attention to the sound. We notice how the sound changes. And then when the sound disappears, we can return to the breathing. So the focus in this kind of hybrid is to have what we call an anchor for the attention to settle and stabilize the mind. But we are attending to how experience changes. So I'll get back to that in just a moment. So whether we cultivate concentration in this one-pointed way or this moment-to-moment way or in a hybrid kind of way, basically concentration and mindfulness work together to settle the mind down. They allow the mind to stop being so distracted and jumpy, thinking about all kinds of different things. They bring us into a kind of more stable place where there's much less reactivity. And this also allows the mind to be able to open to insight. When the mind is reactive to things, we're not going to be able to open to the truth of things as they are. And this is actually, you know, what insight is. You know, what is insight? To answer this question, it's helpful to reflect on what it is that the Buddha was trying to do. And he was looking at this problem of dukkha, of dissatisfaction, of stress, of suffering. You know, how is this suffering created in our experience? And the core reason why we experience suffering, this suffering that the Buddha was looking at, is because we, you know, want things to be other than they are. We're not satisfied with things as they are. We want things to be different. We want to hold on to things that are changing. So we're essentially not satisfied with things as they are. And there's kind of three different ways that we're not satisfied with things as they are. Either we're, you know, we don't like the thing that's here, and you know, we want to get rid of it. It's an unpleasant thing. We want to get rid of it. We like the thing that's here. We want to hold on to it. Or we're just kind of fundamentally confused about the nature of our experience and, you know, the fact that we think that there's something that we need to change is a kind of a delusion. So we have this view that, you know, there's something wrong here. Something has to change. So these three things, you know, greed, aversion, delusion, are what get in our way of being able to meet things as they are. So the kind of core of all of these, of greed, aversion, and delusion, is a kind of an ignorance. So it's an uprooting of this ignorance that the Buddha was looking for. So this ignorance, you know, if we think about this ignorance, you know, from this perspective of, you know, not meeting things as they are. There's three basic fundamental kinds of ignorance that we don't see about experience. We could call them three misunderstandings about experience. There's a misunderstanding that we take what is happening, we take things to be permanent or stable when they're not permanent or stable. We take things to be reliable. We take things to be a place where we can be happy when, because they're changing, there's no way that things can actually be a reliable source of happiness. And we take things to be me or mine. We take experience to be me or mine. When there is, you know, things aren't, there's no real thing there to be me or mine. It's all more a process. So these three basic misunderstandings, impermanence. We take what's impermanent to be permanent. We take what's unreliable to be reliable as a place for happiness. And we take what is not self or what is ephemeral to be, you know, something that is actually stable or me or mine. So these three, these are the three insights that insight meditation refers to. Having a shift of understanding around these three. There's lots of ways that we have insight in meditation. You know, we do see through our practice, you know, as we're paying attention in meditation, we, you know, see how we react to things. We see, oh, I'm really averse to this thing. I don't like this thing. And This is how this aversion functions in my life, and this is why it's here. You know, this is the history of it. And we can see all of that. And that's what I would call kind of a psychological insight. The insights that begin to shake our deeper delusions, our deeper misunderstandings, are these insights into impermanence, unreliability, and not self. And so, for instance, in noticing this aversion that we have, we might at some moment see that the aversion in being observed simply vanishes. We see that it is impermanent. It is a product of how things are put together in causes and, by causes and conditions. That kind of seeing is more what we're what this insight refers to. So the mental cultivation, this stabilizing of the mind in concentration, begins to allow the mind to start to see these insights. Essentially, it's partly because, partly by the mind being present moment to moment. You know, with the mindfulness being present moment to moment, on changing experience, the mind begins to see directly that there's that things aren't permanent. It sees directly that things are changing moment to moment. Things are changing at such a rapid pace, actually. I mean, there's an illusion of permanence that we have, partly because things are changing so rapidly. It's like this analogy doesn't work very well anymore because movies don't work in this frame-like way anymore. But I think most of you know how movies used to work. So there used to be these still images, right, on a film. There was one still image, and then another still image, and then another still image, and then that moved really rapidly past a light, and it looked like there were, you know, things up there moving and changing and doing things. But in reality, there was nothing there. It's just, you know, it's just these very discrete instances of still pictures. The rapidity of moving that past the light is what made it look like there's actually a continuity there. And so in a similar way, you know, the rapidity of change in our experience is kind of masks the there's a kind of a sense that we have of continuity because we don't see how rapidly things are changing. So when the mindfulness begins to get more continuous, it can start to see how rapidly things are changing. So it begins to reveal to us this truth of impermanence. And because we see this truth of impermanence, we see that because things don't last, they're inherently not a good place to say, yes, you know, this is what I want to hang my hat on. This is what I think will be the thing that's going to make me happy, you know, if not for the rest of my life, for at least the next hour. You know, this will do it for me for the next hour. And then I'll find another thing to do it for me for the next hour or two. And then maybe I'll find something that can do it for me for a day or two. And we, you know, we think that we can just keep finding things that we can attach to and find solace in. But when we start to see how rapidly things are changing, this undermines that belief that there is something reliable for us to say, yes, this will do it for me. So it begins to undermine that belief. We discover, actually, one of the things we discover in our mindfulness practice, one of the insights we have is that, you know, it's not even the things in the world. You know, we think there's things in the world we're holding on to, like a partner, you know. You know, that this person, this relationship, this is what's going to make me happy. When we actually look, what we see is that we've created some idea in our minds And it's that idea in our minds that we are holding on to, and we think that idea is what's going to make us happy. And we try to somehow make the world match that idea as closely as we can. So actually, you know, we're holding on to something that's just a thought in our minds. So we suffer because we hold on to things that are impermanent. So this is the kind of key delusion, you know. We think we're going to be happy by trying to construct our lives to have this ever continuous stream of pleasant things in our life. We think we're going to construct that in our lives. And when we suffer when we try to hold on to those things, and they change. They change out from under us. So through the mindfulness, we can start to see that things are unreliable. They are unsatisfactory. And we start to let go. We start to see that the letting go of the holding on is the key to the happiness. It's not having things. It's not constructing things that allows this happiness of insight to manifest. It's the letting go of the holding on. And then there is this, the insight around not self. You know, we take something to be me or mine, or we take something to be I. I am the person who is always right. And then, you know, when it's proved to us that we're wrong, it's like, oh, I'm not always right. I'm a failure. And then we take ourselves to be the failure. So, we construct what we take to be I or me or mine is actually a construction. It's a thought in the mind. It's a construction. But it's constructing out of a process, something that's, it's trying to construct something that's stable out of a process. So what we take to be self is nothing more than a whole process that's unfolding. It's not that there's nothing there. It's not that I'm saying there's nothing there. There is a flow, a stream of causes and conditions. It's a very natural unfolding process. It's kind of like a tree. You know, you plant a seed and you water, there's some conditions that will create that seed breaking open and creating some roots and shooting up a sprout, and then there's this little sprout, and then, you know, given the right conditions, that sprout will become larger and grow into a tree. And it takes, you know, years for this tree to come into being from this small seed. But now, where is that tree? I mean, there's no thingness to that tree, really. It's all a process, and there's no entity behind that process guiding it. It's a natural process. It's just nature. It's causes and conditions that allow that seed to realize its tree nature. And it's kind of similar with us. You know, we're a process of causes and conditions unfolding. And, you know, we kind of impute this sense of I am to that process. So there's no entity guiding and directing. It's really just a process. And again, this is a very fundamental misunderstanding, that as we begin to actually observe our experience, I think the thing that really begins to undercut this belief is really seeing how our experience unfolds as a pattern of cause and effect. We start to see a thought and then a response and then a reaction to that response and then an arising emotion in response to that. And it's just like dominoes falling down. So we can see that there's no one there doing it. It's just a natural process, just like a tree growing. So those are the kind of insights that the concentration can touch into. Now I want to talk a little bit about how concentration fits into this in a very kind of practical way. So the first kind of concentration I talked about, the kind of concentration where the mind gets really, really still and quiet. Now, a lot of times that's what we want to do in meditation, you know, it's like, this feels really good, I'm just going to go take a break and just let the mind get really quiet. This kind of concentration is not particularly conducive to insight because we are focusing on something that becomes really still and stable. So we're not paying attention to change. Pretty much the whole unfolding of the insight around insight meditation comes through the attention to change. So that absorption concentration itself, moving into that space of a really quiet, still meditation, feels really good, but it's not particularly in and of itself conducive to insight. And yet, there are different ways that that practice of concentration contributes to insight, contributes to learning. So I'm going to talk a little bit about different ways that that happens. So first of all, the practice of concentration, you know, before we get to that place where the mind is really still and quiet, what we're doing is we're seeing all the things in our mind that keep us away from that concentration. We're seeing how we're pulled by sense desire, we're pulled by aversion, and we begin to learn what our minds do. You know, so we get a little bit of an education about our minds in trying to come back to the breath. So we learn a little bit about cause and effect. We learn about what kinds of things our minds react to, how it reacts, how we can let those things go. We learn a little bit about the causes and effects for creating the container of concentration. How can we relax to incline the mind towards concentration? So the mind learns a lot about cause and effect in creating this concentration. We start to understand how our mind puts states together, how our minds puts, in particular, this state of concentration together. So this concentration that we get from stilling the mind can also be used. We can once we've found that place of quietness, at some point we can consciously choose to say, okay, you know, now I think I'd like to turn my attention to changing experience. Again, this is the key for insight practice. And there's a couple of different ways to do that. And so essentially what we've been doing in the concentration practice is that concentration has been the kind of center of our intention to concentrate, settle the mind down. And it's really helpful to settle the mind down. When the mind gets settled down, it's much easier to see more clearly. So then once the mind is settled down, shifting the attention. So there's kind of two ways we can do this. One way is to move towards that kind of middle practice that I described. So you've been paying attention to the breath. Instead of paying attention in this way of, you know, letting the mind get really still around the breath and letting the breath get really still, start to pay attention to the detail around the breath. Shift your attention to the mindfulness of the actual changing experience of the breathing. What does the beginning of the in-breath feel like? What does the ending of the in-breath feel like? Start noticing how the breath changes. Another way to do this is to simply let go of the breath altogether and simply see if you can open to the field of changing experience. Kind of open your attention wide and start to notice there's sound, there's other body sensations, there's emotions, there's thoughts. Just kind of open your attention, broaden the attention. This is moving essentially from the focused concentration to the moment-to-moment concentration. And you can do this. It's a choice that you can make in your mind. And I think, at least in my own experience, what I've found from my own practice is that it's helpful to learn how to do both. You know, that some minds are all really different, and some minds are more comfortable in an open awareness field. That's actually where they want to start. And that's great because it really gives you an education in change. It gives you an education in how your mind does what it does. Sometimes I call that practice your mind 101. You know, it really teaches you about what your mind is doing. And yet it's also really helpful to learn how to stabilize the mind in concentration. And some minds more naturally start there. You know, I have a friend who, very easy for her to settle in concentration. You know, it's kind of like that was her doorway in. So, you know, minds are really different. But it's, at least in my experience, I found it helpful to be able to learn how to do both, and that they inform each other. That I started with a pretty focused practice. And, that seemed very natural. I was a computer programmer. My mind focused very easily. But I also saw at some point how much effort and striving there was around that. And then I was introduced to this very open awareness practice. And this takes striving out of the picture in a way, because it's like, you know, instructions are almost like, don't do anything, just sit there. You know, it's like, there's no striving to do. It really takes the doing out of the picture. That was really helpful for me, to take that doing out of the picture for a chunk of time. And then what I saw is that I could then move back to the focused concentration practice with much less striving. And then the depth of that concentration taught me things about subtle ways that I was holding on that I had not seen in the open awareness practice. So for me, there's been a real feedback between the two. So I think it's really helpful to recognize that it's, you know, the malleability of mind to be able to move to both sides is something that we want to cultivate over the life of our practice. But, you know, it's been years for me to do this. You know, I spent a bunch of years with the, you know, focused attention, and then I've spent quite a few years with the open awareness, and now learning this kind of blending of the two has been really, really supportive. So just, you know, start where it's easiest for you. You know, it's really, the Dharma is vast, and you know, any doorway in ultimately opens to all the other parts of the practice. So if it's more natural for you to start with open awareness, start there. And as that gets really comfortable and you're able to really connect with that, then it may be time to go, okay, now let's see what I can do about settling in concentration. And then see how does that then inform back to the open awareness. So, you know, there's so many different ways into this. It's really helpful to find your own way, in a way, to find what works for you. Where is it helpful for you to begin? So as we cultivate our concentration, which from whichever side we are cultivating, this begins to allow us to open to these insights, the direct seeing of these recognitions of impermanence, of unreliability, of not self. Now, there's a distinction in insight. You know, there's kind of a way that we can learn about these things and know, okay, yeah, well, I know everything's impermanent. But that's not the insight into impermanence. You know, the insight into impermanence has a very immediate feel to it. It's a very clear seeing in the moment of, you know, something vanishing or something coming into creation in a moment, out of nothing. Boo! There's a thought arising out of nowhere. It's kind of like startling, the direct seeing of impermanence. So there's a difference between the intellectual grasp of a concept and the direct seeing of that in your experience. And that will be clear to you as you explore it. Let's see. Is there more I want to say here? One other piece. Another way to use the power of the focused concentration for insight. You know, I talked about the kind of insight that we gain about our minds as we're putting the state together. And then if the state is there and stable, you know, there's not much insight that's happening in the stability of that. But that state is impermanent, like any other mental experience. It's impermanent. It's going to end. When that state of concentration falls apart, that's a kind of a time when we can notice the impermanence of that state itself. It's kind of like we turn our attention to the changing nature of the concentration and the falling apart of the concentration. So that's another way that the deeper states of concentration can ultimately open to insight. So the states of concentration, you've probably heard this, that, you know, concentration isn't the doorway to insight. But the concentration is it's like the honing of the mindfulness. It's the honing of the edge of the knife of mindfulness. Without that concentration, that knife is not going to be able to clearly see, to cut clearly into experience. So the concentration is necessary. The deeper states of concentration, the stillness isn't so necessary. That moment-to-moment knowing of experience is really what allows us to open to these insights. So there's just a few minutes for comments or questions.
So I appreciate this. I always wondered which one's better, you know, the focused concentration. I always wondered that, and I asked a teacher once. I said, is one of them better than the other? And he said, no.
That's true.
That was the answer. And I still didn't quite buy it, but this helped. It filled it out more. Another teacher mentioned that a retreat where they start with the breath, focus concentration, and go through the jhanas, which I don't know much about, but then move from there into the insight meditation. And
yes,
that's apparently a really, really good way to start into the insight meditation.
Well, the jhanas are very, very refined states of concentration. They're, you know, they're very still states of mind, and they're four levels of what they call the form jhanas, and each one is more and more refined and more quiet, more and more still. Some minds have a capacity to do that very easily. Other minds, it's like pulling teeth to allow it to really settle that way. And so if you have this view or this idea that you have to do that before you start the insight practice, some people, you'll wait your whole life. And I've seen in my own experience that that level of concentration is not necessary for the insight practice. The insight practice takes the continuity of mindfulness. It doesn't have to be that stillness. Now, that stilling of the mind is a great springboard for opening to the deeper insights. You can, you know, you still the mind in that way, and there's no, like, you know, there's no, not much personality left. There's not much, you know, I or me to, you know, run around and create any kind of confusion at all, you know. So as you are directing to change there, you know, you're right at the level of really bare attention, things just, you know, the very bare level of things just changing in experience. And so you're right at the level of those core insights if you go down to those levels of concentration. On the other hand, if you do that kind of a practice, it can get really easy to move into, if you get good at that kind of concentration, it can get really easy to move into that, those spaces, and completely ignore or put aside for long periods of time all of the junk of our personality. And then when we come out of that concentration and those insights into impermanence, and we, you know, these deep insights into impermanence, and we come out and we're still yelling at our friends, and we're still really angry when our parents says something to us, because, you know, we haven't really investigated how we are responding to everyday life. And so that concentration practice can take us to see very deep insights, and yet it can kind of let us do an end run around our habits of mind. And in some ways, this other way of, you know, just beginning to really notice, not necessarily moving into the deep concentration, but just noticing, well, what is it that keeps me from being concentrated? There we get the education into how we react, how we respond, and the continuity of the mindfulness can build, and we can start to get insight. I mean, I've had some amazingly deep insights in the midst of looking at self-hatred. You know, insights into not self in the middle of looking at self-hatred. So I was not in deep jhana, you know, I was not in deep concentration, but there was deep insight. And boy, that insight into how my self-hatred was put together and created, that had a very transforming effect on me. So I think there's benefits on both sides. And again, you know, follow what's natural for you as the way in, and you know, explore the whole terrain as you can. Yeah.
Thank you.
There may be time for one other quick one if there's something else out there. Okay, well, may you find your own way.